Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody is being safe out there. Obviously, the road conditions today, very icy. Some weather moving in last night. We'll have some more moving in later today in parts of Tennessee as well. So we'll keep you as updated as we can as more information comes available. And as I said to begin the show, I'm not a meteorologist, but I think it's pretty safe to say if you don't absolutely have to be out today, my advice would be to not be out today in this weather that we're dealing with. So hope everybody is staying safe out there. Joe, we had a discussion on Friday on a piece that you came out with on theathletic.com surrounding Jerry Stackhouse and the Vanderbilt men's basketball program. And we talked about just the different challenges that Stackhouse has come in and has to face, taking over for Bryce Drew, the recruiting part of this as well. And obviously, you look at purely the record for Jerry Stackhouse so far at Vanderbilt, it has not gone as well as he would have hoped. Now, Vanderbilt gets a big win over the weekend against Mississippi State, and some pieces of your article that you wrote on Friday were brought up in the post-game press conference by Jerry Stackhouse. Talked about how maybe some of it was taken totally out of context as well. So with that backdrop in mind, Joe Rexroad, I'll turn this over to you, and you can take it any direction that you'd like to take it and kind of explain what happened in the article and what's happened in the, I guess, the aftermath of it since then.
Well, the quote is the quote, and you know, this is where I guess I was probably naive in putting this together, was about it involved the word Trump, you know. So right there, you know, the word Trump is used. You know, you should know someone in my position that, you know, it's going to evoke a reaction. I mean, actually, technically, Stackhouse is right. It was out of context. I mean, the quote was actually a standalone quote. So what I did when I wrote this story, and by the way, you know, there's a transcript of the interview is going to be going up at some point today at theathletic.com. You know, just to have more the full context of that quote and everything else too. I mean, it was a really good interview. But what I did as I was writing it, it's 3,800 word piece, and there were so many good quotes from him. I decided to start each section with a really good quote that was kind of italicized, because, you know, otherwise, if you're trying to fit those in, now you have to write transitions into those quotes, and now you're at 4,500 words or whatever it is. So that was one of the quotes that led the section. And, you know, again, I did not think a ton. I thought it was a good quote, but I did not think that it would become some, as I texted Jerry Saturday morning, bleep storm, which is what it did. And for anybody who isn't familiar, you know, the quote is, you know, what I guess I'll just read part of it. The quote that now all kinds of news organizations are, you know, picking up and going with is, quote, "I don't have the acumen to know what I'm looking at. What's the angst? And it becomes the things we see right in front of us, man. All I can say is 75 million people voted for Trump. That's all I can say. You ain't fooling me. I know what it's about. A lot of you hate everything we did when we came here about the staff, the diversity of the staff. It was this or that. I like to think I know a little something about building teams, what organizations should look like," end quote. You know, there's a lot before that. And actually, again, the question was about Goodman and Twitter. And he starts talking about Goodman and goes on and on, gets into that. Then goes on from there to talk about the staff in particular. And I mean, it's a very, very long total. The total quote to the question is probably about 1,000 words, including that segment of it. So bottom line is, you know, when you talk about taking something out of context, you know, I mean, as people will see in the transcript, I mean, it was kind of randomly thrown in. I mean, he kind of put the quote in out of context. When I heard the quote, I thought, okay, yeah, there's some people who are racist, and I'm sure he's heard some crap, some people who probably are. And look, there's no reason for us to get into some political discussion, but I would hope that we could all agree on some level that the last 4 years have been very racially divisive in this country, and that's been a lot of the discussion, and that people, I think in particular people of color, have looked at the popularity of the former president, and that has been very distressing for them. I mean, I would hope everybody, whether you agree with how they feel or not, I would hope we would be able to agree with that and not be all that shocked if someone says something like that. But, you know, other websites took it and basically said, Stackhouse says Vanderbilt fans are racist Trump supporters, and that's, you know, like, that's instead of, like, they're criticizing him for losing, and all the people who criticize him for losing are racist Trump supporters. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just, that's complete garbage. And that's, and I don't see how anybody could read that quote and go there, but they did. And again, this is where I did text an apology to Jerry again, because I said, I'm sorry this became such a bleep storm. And I wrote that in the thing that'll run today too. I mean, but as far as, like, to me, I didn't do anything wrong in the interview. I don't think Jerry did either. I think it was an honest interview, and some people get mad about stuff, and that's fine. And then, you know, he said some other stuff in the post game that I didn't like very much about journalism, because I just don't think that's fair. But we had a long talk Saturday night, Jerry and I did, and I think it's fine. And ultimately, I think the total takeaway is the same. He is, and by the way, this all overshadows, like, probably the best Vanderbilt basketball game in, like, years.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, like, it's too bad, because he even came out in the post game and immediately started talking about this. But I get it. I'm sure Friday was a heck of a day for him. And yeah, I didn't anticipate that. But when the word Trump is thrown into anything, You probably should. So if I could go back, I probably just wouldn't even run it, even though that kind of goes against, I mean, to me, you know how it is, Robbie. I mean, when you quote anyone doing this job and they say honest stuff that's not coach speak, use the good quotes, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it's been way too much trouble. And again, it's just this misunderstanding and twisting of it. Look, I mean, I think this is going to be Stackhouse. I mean, he's going to say what he thinks. He is going to get in fights with people. He's going to block people on Twitter. He's going to talk trash about Jeff Goodman. I think he was upset that I quoted Jeff Goodman in this story. I think really his side of being upset really is the Goodman stuff. Because Goodman, in the story I wrote about Stackhouse, trashes him, you know?
Right.
I mean, Goodman, and I think it's fair to say, you know, when Goodman says doesn't work very hard, this is where I also go back and say, I needed to push him on that. So how do you know this, Jeff? Like, who has told you this? I mean, I know it's like a perception. Jerry doesn't care about recruiting. Jerry doesn't work. You know, the NBA guy doesn't really care. He wants to go golfing, whatever. But, like, what's your, you know, how is that corroborated other than you think so, you know? And so I understand from the Stackhouse perspective, not liking a Jeff Goodman voice trashing him like that. But here's another thing. In the interview with Jerry, he ripped Jeff Goodman. And as a journalist, you were obligated to call the person who got ripped and get their side of it if you're going to write about it. So,
well, and also, I mean, you mentioned the post-game comments made by Jerry Stackhouse. This is coming from Simon Gibbs. And it just says basically, you know, it's been a whirlwind of 24 hours, but it's all been worth it. First off, I'd like to address this issue that came out from the article that Joe Rexroad wrote. That was totally out of context. I mean, that was something that I was talking about with the media when I first got hired. That was never any attempt to target our fans in any way. There's no way. I'd like to consider myself smarter than that anyway, but he called me and apologized because that wasn't the context of our conversation. You know, I've read the quote, and obviously I did. I was not the one that had the conversation with Jerry Stackhouse, but I did have an issue with him going and saying that it was totally out of context. I mean, he said it. He said it in the interview.
Yeah. No, yeah, exactly. And again, like, I mean, so again, was it out of context? I mean, when you take a quote and just run it alone, then automatically, yes. So technically he's right. I would argue again, like, it was out of context in his comment, you know, it was just sort of randomly thrown in there. Again, like this interview was awesome. That's the thing. And I hear what, you know, I do understand. And we talked about this, like, when you're talking with someone back and forth and it, like, you're laughing and it's a good conversation. And I think, again, I think a lot of it was really illuminating. You know, it is different when you then see things in print. Okay. And I think that's part of this too. is like when you just read some of these things and you don't have the tone, you know, I mean, but that's also a common thing for us. I mean, there are limitations to the print format. So
you cannot write a 10,000 word piece.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like right now, as we talk, I'm here trying to get the thing I'm writing today. It was like at 7,700 words, you know, with the transcript. I mean, it's just, you're asking people to do a little too much work here to, you know, to read all this stuff. But look, I think he was on the defensive. And again, I think I'm sure like Friday was a brutal day. And it's just, it's too bad that it took on that life of its own, because again, I think like his thing, it's clear. He feels like people are saying, so Jerry's saying like all the like old white Vanderbilt fans are racist or whatever. Right. And he's right that like, he wasn't specifically talking about fans. I took it as just could have been anyone, media, fans, whoever. There's some people who don't like him because of the color of his skin. I mean, I don't know how anybody could argue with that. But regardless, you know, we're fine. And I think this transcript will be worth reading for everybody. And we'll see what happens. I mean, it's, he is a sensitive person. I think there's no doubt about that. And I think it probably would serve him well to just not even look at Twitter, you know, and probably not so. Worry about blocking people and stuff like that. But, hey, here's the bottom line. If Jerry Stackhouse gets it going and turns it around and wins here, then a lot of this stuff that people are ripping turns from this guy's thin-skinned and combative to this guy's got passion and energy, and this, he doesn't take any crap from anyone. You know, I mean, it's all colored by winning and losing.
It is. And if you'd like to check out that transcript, Joe Rexroad, I believe you said later today, it will be out on theathletic.com.
I'm working on it.
All right. So he's working on it. 7,700 words deep at this point. So you can tell a lot of work put into this by Joe Rexroad. When we come back, we'll continue sort of a state of journalism discussion. There's a lot of chatter around the Nashville Predators and the media contingent on Saturday night as well. Is the Predators media contingent too soft? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Ryan Poore taking you through this Monday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, we had some discussion about the media and the state of journalism in our last segment revolving around Jerry Stackhouse and the piece you came out with on theathletic.com last Friday. There was more conversation around the media on Saturday night with the Predators game. We've talked about it already here in the show, a 4-2 loss for the Predators against Detroit on Saturday night in a game where, quite frankly, it was rough to begin that game. 30 minutes of, you know, 6 shots on goal, the offense just not getting much done in that game. And some conversation cropped up throughout the game on Twitter and on social media about the Nashville Predators media and about how maybe at times they're soft. Now, the Nashville Predators media, I mean, there's a lot of people included in that discussion, including myself and yourself, our good friend Adam Bingen, lots of people from A to Z Sports, the On the Forecheck. I mean, really all over the map. There's a ton of contingent when it comes to the Predators media and the way that things operate. Joe, I'll ask you this because I'm interested to get your perspective on this as a guy who's been in multiple media markets and has covered multiple teams. When you look at the state of the media, not only with the Nashville Predators, but really here in Nashville, what comes to mind, and does the word soft creep into that discussion at all?
Well, yeah, look, I think relative to other markets, I think Nashville media, we call ourselves soft all the time, and we're probably right to some extent. You know, I mean, I will say that, yes, you know, I'm very familiar with, you know, I've never worked like in like Philly, New York, or anything like that.
Right.
But I'm very familiar with certainly I worked in the Detroit media market for a long time. Very familiar with like Chicago. And yeah, I mean, the more, you know, basically a lot of it is like the more people you have covering a team, the more that some feel the need to be a little bit out there to distinguish themselves. So,
right.
I don't think it's just like, oh, tough media people in whatever city. It's, I mean, when you have, you know, 40 people covering the Bruins or whatever, the Eagles, I mean, you know, I think you see more stuff like that. I mean, Boston radio, I mean, you know, Jared likes to play, you know, the Boston radio guys every day. Oh, they play just for Tommy, you know, they just wanted to play the Super Bowl for Tommy. And I'm like, what? Yeah, so there's a lot of stupid crap too. I think sometimes we focus on being soft. Let's be a smart media market. I think that would be good. But yeah, I mean, look, I would say that this is a much easier place to be than a lot of places. Look, we've been talking about Stackhouse. You know, Stackhouse on a regular daily basis is covered by the Vanderbilt Hustler, the student paper, the Tennessean with my guy Adam Sparks.
Yep.
You know, you've got you know, Chris Lee at Rivals and Robbie Weinstein at 24/7, and that's about it on the daily basis. And obviously, you know, I come in there, write some stuff. TV comes in and write some stuff, but basically that's it. I mean, that's so different from a lot of major college jobs, you know. And so, overall, I would say that, you know, I mean, it's just easier to deal with than a job like his. And then when you get it to the pro level, and I think, you know, the Preds, like you said, there's a lot of different outlets. I think there's a perception that there's a lot of homerish coverage of the Preds. But, man, like, I feel like it's been the tone of media this year has been totally on point, you know? I mean, look, people are coming at my guy Vingan again. I said it earlier in the show on Twitter. And I've been exactly where he is as a beat writer for a team struggling. And people saying, why aren't you asking the tough questions, you know? Like, there was actually a Michigan State fan – hashtag about all of us beat writers. It was hashtag soft journalism because, like, I mean, basically it's like, so we are asking all the questions. What would you like us to ask?
That's the thing.
Like Mark, so, you know, Michigan State, or like with the Preds, like David, is David Poyle going to be fired or should he be deported? You know, like, I mean, Vingan asked LaViolette about his job last year. So like much to times. The point that like LaViolette finally stopped like talking to him. Right. I mean, it's not a matter of, you know, the tough question. They're asked, but you put yourself in the seat and then tell me what amazing question you're going to ask other than like, why are you ruining my night? And do you know how much I hate you? You know, like you can't ask emotional fan questions. You got to be professional. But I also think just all the different people who cover and comment on the Preds. I mean, have you seen like too much positivity this year?
No, and look, this has been a discussion, quite frankly, that drives me nuts for a long time. Number one, you've got media outlets and people in the media here that say stuff like this and then are nowhere to be found on a press conference. And that drives me absolutely insane. So you talk about the state of the media and the Preds media, and then when push comes to shove, you're nowhere to be found. So really everything you have to say is totally invalidated, in my opinion, at that point. But beyond that, I get this sometimes from fans too. And my response is exactly the thing that you just threw out there, Joe. And that is always, all right, well, what would you have me ask? And I would say 90 to 95% of the time, the questions that they throw out there have already been asked and they've been asked in multiple forms. And the ones that aren't are usually so emotional and so, quite frankly, ridiculous at times that it's not worth asking. So this boils down to, I think, generally a lack of understanding of how this job is done, but this happens a lot. It's not just with the Predators. I mean, it happens with the Titans, I'm sure as well, but just specifically in my realm that I've been dealing with the last, you know, decade has been with the Nashville Predators. And it's just always fascinating when this conversation comes up, because I always clap back at them and say, all right, well, what would you like to be asked? And generally speaking, it's already been asked of these people like 5 to 10 times. Like there's only so many times you can ask a question before you're just getting to yourself where you're getting to a point where you're just repeating yourself and beating a dead horse out there. So those are a couple of parts of this discussion that drives me nuts. But if you're somebody that's, you know, trying to ask something like this or talk about the Preds media and you're in the media and you're not out there asking questions, probably just need to shut up.
Oh, there's my first
meeting. Yeah, I was about to say. I knew we'd have one.
You know what, though? There you go. I gave you a hands-on example. Just mute yourself. See? Nice. How about that?
Nicely done.
I'm illustrating it for you. But, no, I mean, I think that's a fair thing, too. I think the commenting on media softness, if you're going to do that, especially if you're commenting on media softness in the questioning of whoever, of a particular team, the coach, the players, GM, then you better be asking questions of them too. Okay. So that should be, you're right. That's an automatic rule. So for example, if you want to take this one direction. So, you know, Jared, from time to time, I take a little shot at my buddy, Jared Stillman. But you know what? Jared does show up to pressers and ask questions. Good questions at times, even at times, Jared, at times, but you know, he's not afraid to ask like, you know, a point blank, I guess, quote unquote, confrontational question at a press conference. So good for him. Cause I will say, and this is certainly, I've got some friends in Detroit radio in particular who are very opinionated, very, very attacking of anything that goes wrong and never, ever get into any of those situations. Don't go to anything. And to me, it's like, there's a limitation to, in my opinion, to that, opinion from you, because you aren't seeking out one, people to be informed. And also two, you're not showing up and being willing to these people that you're trashing, being accountable on your end. You know, I think that's a big part of it. But I mean, look, I do think there's also in this town a perception, I think, especially fans of both teams, that Titans media in general is harder on the Titans than Preds media is on the Preds. And I think there's probably some fairness to that. I mean, again, a lot more people are covering the Titans,
right,
than the Preds. And I think there's even like an NFL, NHL thing. I think the NHL, frankly, I mean, now we can go into a totally different direction. I think the NHL needs to be more open and needs to embrace the openness of like, hey, ask whoever you want, whatever you want. Whereas in the NHL, sometimes you'll have like someone who makes a game losing play and there's no way you're getting that person after the game, which to me is ridiculous in professional sports. Ridiculous. And the money that's flying around here in the NFL, someone screws up a game, you go to the whole open locker room, talk to whoever you want, and talk to them for 20 straight minutes about it. It's not the case in the NHL. So there's a softness, I think, to the NHL relative to the NFL. That's also part of this. But I would agree that, like, I think the Titans media core is more likely to come right at, like, a Vrabel after a game, you know, than the Preds media core. But again, I think it's just like a high school that's a certain size. You're going to have, you know, like you've got a lot more good athletes, you know. That's a pretty bad analogy actually, but you know what I'm saying.
I do. I do know what you're saying. It's just one of those things, and this is going to happen. Like when you get in a situation where you're struggling as a team, and we've talked about it, the fan frustration this year is boiling over. Quite frankly, I mean, it was there before the season began based on the way last season went and the way that it ended against Arizona. And then you factor in the offseason moves, and now you're 6-9-0 on the season. Obviously, there are a lot of fans out there that are frustrated, and they want to see some changes made, and they don't want to see, you know, wait to see changes made. They want to see changes made right now. And I realize that, like, in this world and the environment we live in, when you don't have those changes met immediately, there's going to be stuff like this. But I just think when you really break it all down and get to the bottom of it, I mean, we've talked about pretty much everything that needs to be talked about. The questions that need to be asked have been asked for the most part up to this point. Now, maybe you get to a point later on in this season where some different questions have to start being asked, and we'll talk about that as the season continues to develop here. But I just saw that flying around on Saturday night, and when you get down to the bare bones of it, it really doesn't have a whole lot of merit, because basically everything that, you know, fans want to be asked has been asked up until this point. So we'll continue to monitor that as it goes forward here. More action for the Predators tonight, and who knows? Maybe we'll jump on and there'll just be, you know, hardball after hardball question tonight, or today at the morning skate, and then tonight after Dallas. We'll see if we can make all the fans happy. What do you think, Joe?
Well, I mean, and if they win, I still expect you to get on there and say, who's getting fired? I don't care. Who's fired?
Yeah, that's the other thing.
You're fired.
Just zero understanding of how press conferences work as well. When we come back, we will get into the Tennessee Vols and their basketball team. Another highly disappointing performance over the weekend for Rick Barnes and company. Is this team just very simply an overrated team? We'll talk about it next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Make sure you're tuning in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. The Preds taking on the Dallas Stars tonight, so we'll have that opportunity for you coming up at 8:45 as we do on every Predators game day here on Robbie and Rex Road. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this icy Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody is being safe out there. Obviously, some very bad road conditions, so make sure if you have to travel that you're being as careful as you possibly can be. Joe Rex Road, another disappointing performance for Tennessee and their men's basketball team over the weekend, a 78-65 loss to LSU in a game where, I mean, we've talked about the issues with this team, how, I mean, there are times this year, where, like the Kansas game, where they look really, really good and a team that could do some damage in the NCAA tournament. And then there are some times, there are some games where it looks like this team would have some trouble beating anyone, whether it's due to offensive inconsistency, some fouls, and some trouble that they get into in that regard. And it was just ugly for the Vols on Saturday against LSU. It was a game that they had no business losing, a game that they absolutely should have won. And Joe, I got to be honest, like I'm starting to think this Tennessee team might be a little bit overrated. And maybe overrated is not the right word. They're just so inconsistent that it's hard to trust them, because I still think that when they're at their top level, they're a really, really good team, and they're a team that can hang in there with anybody. Problem is, they're just so wildly inconsistent and have been for a pretty extended period of time now that it's hard to trust this Tennessee team.
Yeah, I'm worried about this team. You know, and it's like it's good to keep in perspective. I mean, that was their fifth loss, you know, of the season. You know, there's still, I mean, going into that day, you know, like Joe Lenardi had it projected as a 3 seed, like they still have a really good shot to be, you know, a 3 or a 4 and have a chance to make a run. But that game Saturday, I mean, they were just flat out, they were out hustled the entire day. They're weak with the ball, and LSU just ripping it out of their hands, going up and down the floor. This defense, which has been great, I mean, it's the number one defense and defensive efficiency in the country coming in. And LSU just shredded them. And a lot of it was, you know, was getting in transition. But also just having more passion. And that's my concern for this team is who is, and it's been a concern, you know, since they had all time great alphas on that team from a couple of years ago, for a few years, having Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield. You knew that if something was going wrong, those guys would say it and say it to their teammates, get in their face if they needed. They were, you know, they were just terrific players, but the intangibles were really key for them. And look, it's not Fulkerson's nature to be that guy. It's not Eve Pond's nature to be that guy. Those are the seniors. What you need, and actually Wes Rucker tweeted this the other day, and I totally agree. And to me, the guy who needs to take charge more and more is Josiah James. I think he is. I think he's a natural leader, and as we move forward, that's going to be the case. But this also, it's hard if you aren't playing well to be that guy too. And he's still kind of up and down. Some days he shoots well, some he doesn't. He's always defending, rebounding, and all that. But he's got to be more assertive. And it's just an interesting team because, like, they have to rely so much on the freshmen. And we know this is probably the 1 year that those guys – I mean, I think probably both of them, the way Springer's playing now, probably both going to be first-round picks.
Yep.
So you got to take advantage of that, and they're tremendous talents. But you can't – this team isn't going anywhere just on that. I mean, these upperclassmen – I mean, like, Pons is playing well still. Fulkerson, I don't know what's going on with him. But, and Rick Barnes asked it again, like, we talk about it. He knows what the problems are. And I'm paraphrasing Rick Barnes after the game. He knows we've showed him, but he's got to do it. I don't know what's going on with Fulkerson, but he seems to have no confidence right now.
Joe, they shot 22 of 62 in that game on Saturday against LSU, 35.5% from the floor, under 30% from 3-point. To me, that as much as you talk about like the passion and the concerns that you have there, which I think are totally valid with this team, to me that's the biggest concern I have with this team is they either shoot lights out or they can't shoot at all. And it's just really difficult to make a deep tournament run that way when you're so inconsistent with your offense. I mean, 35.5%. Like, it's obvious at this point. I think this team is not a great three-point shooting team. I think that's pretty obvious at this point. But 35.5% from the field, they've not been able to develop an inside game anywhere near as consistently as I thought they would. And to your point, I think Fulkerson is a big part of that. But it's just so hard to trust this team when they are so up and down with their shooting percentages. And it's been that way all season long. That's, you know, we've talked about the defense and how good it's been. Offensively, they have been so inconsistent this year that it's very difficult, I think, for Tennessee fans to trust them on that side of the ball.
Yeah, and that's true. And I don't know. I mean, that's the thing when you get into, you know, can you make a tournament run? I don't think there's any way you can expect them to be hot for six straight games or, you know, for four straight games to get them, you know, to the Final Four. But the thing is, that's where when you have a defense that normally is as good as this one is, that's what travels, you know? I mean, that to me gives you hope that you can overcome those days. But you're right. I mean, sometimes it's still in this game. You just feel way better when the ball's going in and you got a little bit more spring in your step defensively. You're a little bit better on the boards. And when the ball's not going in, it can be demoralizing. And it is weird how this team seems to have really hot or, you know, or really cold nights. You know, even the freshmen, tremendous talents, you know, no doubt about it. And the funny thing is I have thought all year, like, Springer's not a great three-point shooter, but the guy is 53%. He's only taking 28. I guess he should take more. Like, Keon Johnson's a 29% shooter. Victor Bailey, after a hot start, man, that guy is struggling. He's struggling in every way. I mean, he's a 29% three guy right now. That's bad. And when you're struggling on D, makes it worse. Obviously, I mean, I think they need to get more shots for Vescovi. He's almost 40%. You know, Josiah James, 34%. I mean, Pons takes some threes. But if you're the other team, please take threes, Eve Pons.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Take those threes. Don't come in with that body and dunk on us or drive to the hole or get to the line. I mean, he's 11 for 41, 26% from three. He has taken 25 free throws this year, 76%, 25 free throws. All the guys I mentioned, James, Vescovi, Bailey, Fulkerson, Johnson, Springer, all of them have taken significantly more free throws than Eve Pons has taken. Dude, put the ball on the floor and go attack somebody. And that's my criticism of him. Now, still, he's such an important player, especially defensively. But they got to get the right people shooting the ball. And I think they probably need to get Springer more shots. And some of these other guys, it's like, do something different. Don't just settle for the three. And this is where, like, going into Fulkerson in the post was something I thought this team could always rely on. Defense and just being able to do that when they need a bucket. But that just disappeared.
And then, Joe, on the other side of things, Belmont gets another win over the weekend. It gets Morehead State. They have won 19 games in a row. They're 16-0 in the OVC. They're 22-1 overall. Could Belmont be the best team in the state? Like, I realize the OVC is a much different competition level than the SEC. And Tennessee, just athletically, they've got some pieces that Belmont, quite frankly, just doesn't have. But could Belmont actually be the best team in the state?
Absolutely. And could Belmont beat Tennessee on a given night? Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, right now, the funny thing is, you know, Belmont-Tennessee would be like a 5-12 game. Yeah. We know what happens in those 5-12 games. Now, like you said, does Tennessee have more talent? Without question. But I'll tell you what, right now, I'll take Nick Mazinski in the post 10 times out of 10 over John Fulkerson.
Yeah.
I'll take Grayson Murphy at the point, who, by the way, just had the first triple-double in program history, over Vescovi. And you're talking about the record for OVC wins. I think Casey Alexander should be a national. I mean, the national coach of the year is going to be probably Mark Few or Scott Drew, right?
Right.
It's Few or Drew, but I think Casey Alexander should be like in that list at this point for, with what they've done. They are a special team, and offensively, they have so many guys who can hit shots. That would be actually be a fun game. I'd love to think we could get that game, but yeah, I think Belmont at some point here needs to be in the top 25, and I think that may be coming soon.
Coming up next, we'll get into the Tennessee Vols and their football program. We've gone through the weekend and still some openings on the Tennessee coaching staff. How concerned are we at this point about what this staff could look like? We'll discuss that next. Also, get to some comments from former Tennessee coach Butch Jones as well. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll be joined by our friend Corey Curtis from News 2 to begin the 8 o'clock hour. So looking forward to that conversation with him. Darren McFarland will join us at 9 o'clock to get into the latest with the Nashville Predators as well. And as we've said all morning long, hope everybody is being safe out there. Obviously, some bad weather has moved in here. The roads are very icy, very slick. Ryan Porth, you came into the office late last night to sleep overnight in the office so you could help produce our show today. We appreciate your efforts, but you met a little resistance on the way in, for what I understand.
Well, all right. So usually my trek from Mount Juliet to the station is about 25 minutes. And it took me a good every bit of 45 minutes last night to get here. Got here about 10:15, 10:30, and blew up the air mattress and crashed in the office overnight. But on my way here, I was going probably about 30 miles an hour on Lebanon Pike in Donelson, and I felt like I was probably going maybe a little too fast, but I didn't want to go so slow that I might get caught. You know, but I at least like to stay moving in weather like this and not,
right,
you know, be a snail out there. And somebody just zipped by me and honked at me once as he was behind me, and then honked again as he was passing me. And he probably, well, I shouldn't say he, this person was probably going 40, maybe even 50 miles an hour. And I was just like, dude, like, you're going to honk at me for going this slow in what is, you know, one of the worst ice storms we've seen in the last 6 years? Probably the biggest ice storm that we've seen since 2015. So,
yeah, I mean, it's like a rink out there right now.
Yes.
Like you're driving a Zamboni around.
So to that guy, I know this is a segment on Fridays with Darren Donick and Chase, but you just made the list.
There you go.
So is this, did he have an Ohio license plate, Ryan?
Wow.
Well, listen, I know you're from Ohio, but we should both be able to agree Ohio drivers suck. Come on. We can agree on this.
A lot of drivers from a lot of states suck.
Wow.
Yeah, but
Porth not Ohio willing to throw his own people under the bus.
No, I'm not. I'm not. And it's not isolated to Ohio or Tennessee or Georgia, who has some pretty bad drivers. There's bad drivers everywhere.
In all fairness, Tennessee is a place that gets made fun of for not being able to drive in the snow and, like, you know, operate that way. Today's a little bit different. I mean, it's just it's a sheet of ice. It's a little bit different out there today.
Yes, in any state, stay home during this. And Porth, going back to our discussion on soft media, I think you're being a little soft on Ohio drivers, but yeah, we'll get through it.
Okay.
Well done, Ryan Porth. We appreciate your efforts. We would not have honked at you on the way in. We're glad to have you here in the studio today.
Very appreciative of that.
Safe. Yes, thank you very much. I'm sure you look great today as well, by the way. Didn't get that in this morning. Figured I'd get it in right now. Joe Rexroad, we talked about, you know, Josh Heupel and his coaching staff last week and how still no defensive coordinator has been hired for the Tennessee Volunteers. We talked about Kevin Steele and why the Vols have not gone that route at this point. Here we are on Monday morning. The weekend has come and gone for the Vols, and still no defensive coordinator for the Tennessee Vols. How concerned are you at this point, if you're a Tennessee fan, that Josh Heupel has not been able to fill this role yet?
Well, first of all, I lean on you in certain times with Tennessee football as a plugged-in Vols fan. Like, is there anything happening right now? I mean, I just
there's
I
not
haven't
much, man.
Seen a lot.
Yeah. No, there's not much going on out there.
I mean, I guess it's, signing day just happened. Spring ball's a few weeks away. Like, it's not the absolute most urgent thing in the world. But then again, you want to start working on like that 2022 class. I'd say some of those kids who play defense would like to, like to know who's going to be running the show, and you'd like to get people in there and start getting to work on trying to figure out this team. I mean, it's just been a long time. Again, it's just such a weird situation. One, it's played out publicly with some people who have opted not to take it. And again, it's kind of like in past head coaching searches where you're like, really? You don't want the Tennessee job? No?
Yeah.
Okay. And, and then you've also just got the whole Kevin Steele thing, which just, it's very strange. And it's just, it's like Tennessee has this, it's not at all the same, except that it does remind me a little bit of like when we were trying to figure out for weeks, like if Jeremy Pruitt was going to be the coach or not, it just keeps dragging on and on. And it's just one more thing for Vols fans to fret about.
Speaking of things for Vols fans to fret about, Joe, I'm sitting here last night on my couch and I'm just, minding my own business. I think American Sniper was on TV, so I was watching that. I love that movie. And I'm scrolling through Twitter, and all of a sudden I see some reports out there that Gus Malzahn is in the running to become the next head coach at UCF. And I about fell out of my chair. I really did. Because we talked about Gus Malzahn, if you're the Vols, like, why did you not make that call? Like, you feel like Gus Malzahn may be a guy that would be interested to come in, take the Tennessee job. If Tennessee ends up with Josh Heupel as their head coach, and Gus Malzahn is his replacement at UCF, people in Knoxville are going to lose their mind. I saw that last night, and I said, of course he is. Of course Gus Malzahn is probably going to become the next head coach at UCF. It's amazing.
Yeah. I know, some people, some Vols fans just rejected Gus out of hand. Like, no way, no thanks, I thought was – Yeah, but would you take him or Josh Heupel right now?
Oh, I would take him for sure.
Like, I think there's still some Vols fans who would be like, no, good, don't want anything to do with that guy, which I just strongly disagree with. But, yeah, I mean, if that's how it plays out, man, hey, we'll see how it goes. But I was always probably not as bullish as Porth was, but of the attainable candidates, I thought he was an awfully solid option. Guy who has won at a high level, won a national championship, won in this league, certainly has some questions about his offense and things like that and the inconsistency of his teams. But, I mean, there's just way more meat on that bone than what the Vols have right now as their head coach.
And y'all,
I don't know how anybody could argue otherwise.
And y'all just laughed at me when I brought up the Gus bus, a couple months ago.
I didn't laugh at you.
Well, a certain person on this show did. And I was like, well, what do you expect out of your coaching search? And now the Gus bus could be going to Orlando.
Ryan Porth, I'd like to take this opportunity to publicly apologize to you. I'm sorry.
Apology taken.
Thank you. We appreciate
it. Very nice. An apology and another reference to how you must look. Very nice today. So.
Yes, two for two very in this nice segment so far. Joe, our friend David Ubben, friend of the show, your colleague at The Athletic, has come out with a piece this morning about a conversation with Butch Jones. And I'm kind of reading through it right now, trying to have done it throughout the entire show here. It's a long piece, but lots of really interesting stuff in it. But just kind of a conversation with Butch Jones, obviously the new head coach at Arkansas State, and looking back at his time at Tennessee as well. One of the quotes that stands out to me so far through reading it is, David asked Butch about, what would 2021 tell Butch Jones in 2013? What would he go back in time and tell himself? And the quote from Butch Jones is this: I've thought about that in great detail. I would say just keeping the main thing, and staying focused on our players, recruiting, and the overall development of everyone in our organization. You can't let any outside clutter or distractions kick in. And we've talked about, Joe, how that just seemed like at the end of Butch Jones's tenure at Tennessee consumed him with the outside noise. It appears in this conversation that at least he's learned that part of it during his time in Alabama, and that would be the thing he would go back and change.
Yeah, it's a really interesting interview, and I know David's been working hard to try to get him and got him, and he was know, I mean, he was pleasantly surprised at how open Butch was. Now, you still, you know, for anybody who reads this, you're still going to see some spin on all the great things he did in Tennessee. And, you know, he's, and of course, he's not throwing anybody under the bus, but there were some really interesting quotes about how tough that time was for him, too. And I think he, I mean, look, anybody who covered Butch during his time here knows that's 100% right. Now, could he actually do it? I don't know. I mean, I don't think he's going to have to do, you know, he's not going to have to deal with this stuff at Arkansas State. You know, he can, but at Tennessee, he absolutely was way too consumed by what people were saying, what media were saying. And I think it absolutely hurt him because he did some good things. So that is some self-awareness from him. And it's an interesting interview. Here, I'll say this about Butch, Robbie. I guess time goes on. I think the Butch jokes may lose a little bit of luster, you know, like now it's the Pruitt gets to be the next guy that we all joke about for the next few years.
Well, the Butch trash can to me will never lose its luster, but I think everything else, you may be right on board with that one. When we come back, we'll be joined by Corey Curtis, our good friend from News 2. We'll get into the JJ Watt discussion with him. Should the Titans pursue J.J. Watt? We'll discuss it with Corey next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.